Right, hello everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode, to a very special episode of DocuPod. I'm Josh. Joined with me, as always, is my co-host JP.
Hello there.
And with us, as always, our second guest. Our second host.
Wow.
Second co-host, Bradley Fuller.
Second host, me. Hello.
That's cold.
Now, there's a few reasons why this is a very special episode. A little bit of a change to the format. Look forward to that. Exciting. But the main reason is because we are reviewing Waters of Mars today, which is the best episode of Doctor Who of the entire revival, I think.
Whoa. That's a bold thing to
I
say.
Actually agree with that, to be honest.
Really?
Mate, yeah. Look, there's a reason we do this podcast, and I think we'll get around to it. But yeah.
We absolutely will. But obviously, doing our little tease as we always do, in a sentence, Jack.
I wanted to watch The Thing after this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm, I was getting Alien vibes. I know you boys are
just doing
a watch of Alien. Yeah. Bradley?
Again, didn't think of The Thing, but I'm going to say we did watch The Thing after this, and I thought The Thing was awful. So this is much better than The Thing.
Better than The Thing.
I just want to say now that we only watched the first, what, half an hour? Not even that. So before it even got good.
It was awful.
You guys are going through like a
half
classic
of the film and nothing
horror
happened.
Fest thing at the minute, aren't you?
Yeah, it's watching Alien.
Well, and The Thing. I've never seen The Thing either, but you wouldn't recommend it, Brad.
No, it was awful.
No. To begin with, Brad went, I don't like any films that are like, you know, before the 2000s.
There's very few films that I like that are very old. And that consists of like Italian Ghostbusters. So
Ghostbusters is awful. Didn't you just say you liked Alien?
Italian job is class. Alien was good, yeah. Alien is good.
But Josh, you got to watch The Thing, man. It's a great film. Like the original as well.
I will definitely give it a go at some point. My sentence is going to be, as I sort of implied at the beginning, best episode of the revival. Certainly so far, potentially, of the revival. I don't think it gets much better than this. But before we delve in, we're obviously going to do our usual segment, Who News? Insert theme tune here.
I never really know how long a gap we need to leave, or just, do you just do it anyway? So.
Well, I just do it in the edit after anyway, so it's fine.
Okay. I mean, I don't think there's a massive amount. I don't know if anyone had a little look at the BBC Proms. That was very heavily advertised yesterday.
Oh my God, I had to mute their Instagram account because they kept on sending out bloody messages.
Oh, really? Oh, you got like one.
Last night was just bing, bing, bing. It's like, fucking hell, Doctor Who, chill out.
Oh, I didn't even read them, but and I haven't really seen anything about it. But yeah, it's a pretty big deal, I think, most of the time.
Did you watch it?
I don't really know what it's about. I've never watched it. Have you watched it before?
I think I watched an old one where it had like Matt Smith and Clara jumped in. I think I went through a phase of just like having it on in the background when working from home, which is probably the geekiest thing you've ever heard. It's just like a like a concert, but it's only Doctor Who music and it's done with like a 50-piece orchestra.
Why is it called The Proms?
Question.
Good question.
It's a night at the prom that like kids went to.
but I think it's
for adults.
All right.
I don't know. Anyway, check it out. I'm going to probably check it out, maybe.
I'm gonna watch it before we record the next week's episode. I'll give it a watch. I saw it come up, but I just had a busy bank holiday weekend.
I mean, we could talk about the Disney suing a man, or not Disney not allowing a man to sue, even though they killed his wife.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. It is because Doctor Who is for Disney Plus. There you go.
Okay. Very loose link, but.
No, it basically means anybody that watches Doctor Who on Disney Plus, good luck if your significant other dies, because you can't see them.
Just the Mickey Mouse hit squad, just bang, can't sue us.
I mean, it's pretty old news now, and it's going to be old news when this gets released in a week anyway, so we won't dwell on it for too long. But they've dropped it, right? They're allowing it to go to court is the last thing I heard.
Yeah, they've dropped it, pretty much. They dropped it because... It's one of those things that they try and get away with, and they kind of didn't count on the publicity behind it, because it's absolutely fucking appalling, really. Like, it's just, you know, the park should be, as long as everything, I mean, you know, you don't know exactly what's happened, but from everything that I've seen, the park should be liable. You know, apparently they said multiple times that she was allergic to whatever it was, and the waiter, waitress, whoever it was, confirmed, and yet they still gave her something that contained that allergen anyway. So they should be at fault. The fact that they were just like, they were trying to play a sly kind of angle, it's just poor. But it's just big corporations, though, isn't it, really?
It's insane. It's like at the end of Jurassic Park, if John Hammond turned around and said, "Oh yeah, but this isn't technically my fault." Like, it's so blatantly evil. Like, just unbelievable. Just absolutely unbelievable.
Bear in mind, Brad and I have been watching Alien. It is like Weyland-Yutani putting you on a second ship to go get eaten by an alien or impregnated by an alien after you threatened to sue them after the first incident. You know,
Bizarre, bizarre,
yeah,
but
we've only got 200 years to go before
yeah, but we're certainly making our
that.
way slowly, slowly.
We're on the way now. Yeah.
I don't really have anything to add to Who News. There is, oh no, I do.
Ooh,
Peter
ooh.
Capaldi. Did either of you watch his Apple series Criminal Record?
Nope, don't
No.
have Apple TV.
Genuinely very good. Would 100% recommend. Just been renewed for season two. Excited for that.
Oh, was that your news?
I thought it was going to be more. Sorry.
I
No,
thought that
that's
was the
the
only
only
news.
news apart
It's
from
just been
an Apple
renewed for
TV
season
show.
two.
I thought he was going to
Right,
say, and he made
okay.
a reference to Doctor Who or something like that. No, it's
Yeah,
just been
that's
renewed for
cool.
season. Oh, okay.
No,
Yeah,
it's
well.
just a very good season. It's coming back. It has a Doctor Who person in. It's news. It's Who News. It's good enough for us, isn't it?
Well, I guess so. It's been a quiet week, really, isn't it? So,
Well,
yeah, there's not really a
okay.
lot else going on, is there?
Let's move on because very exciting news, but not Who News, but Doctor Who Pod news. There is a new format is shaping. I don't know if you boys can feel that. We're gonna call it,
The what?
or I'm deciding that we're gonna call it Conversations with a Companion, which I think is an
Awful name.
excellent name.
I still like Meet the Fans.
Meet the Fan is so narcissistic, though. We don't
No,
have
it's
fans.
not.
Doctor Who
We
has
do. We have
fans. We've
followers who
just got
listen.
people on. Anyway,
No, we're a fan.
it's
We've got
going to
fans.
be a sort of semi-recurring segment. We've tasked Jack, well, we've nominated Jack as, I suppose, head interviewer.
Well, I felt left out when you boys did your recent, like the modern Doctor Who stuff. I felt left out. So, yeah. Oh,
So,
okay.
week by week, or as often as we can, we're going to get one of the listeners on. So, if you are listening to this, and if you ever thought you'd like to basically contribute to this conversation or tell us to shut the fuck up because we're irritating, just let us know. We'd love to have you on. We're going to keep it brief. It's going to be sort of around about a 15-minute segment. You can obviously talk to Jack for as long as you want. I'll edit out all your boring shit in the edit. But yeah, we're well, I tell you what, actually, Brad, let's dip out. Let's let Jack welcome the host to our marvelous podcasting room that we do this in. And enjoy your interview, JP, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Conversations with companions.
How you doing, Matt? You all right? Nice to finally see you. How you doing?
Yeah, good, good.
Welcome to the guest section of the Doc Who podcast. How you feeling? First guest ever on the show.
That feels good.
Yeah. But I suppose the first question is, how did you find us?
A Wars of Mars is honestly one of my favorite episodes, period. I mean, it's horrifyingly brilliant.
Yep.
In the It terrified me as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
I refused to watch this episode for about 4 years after really.
Yeah, no, I've got to say, we all came to the conclusion that one, it was by far the scariest episode of Doctor Who that I've seen. I don't know about future episodes or not, but the second is just it was just one of the best. I mean, it's now my favorite episode. I know that Josh said it was as well. Brad said it was a good episode. I still think I think there's other ones that he likes, but yeah, no, so it's good. So yeah, so de definitely a favorite one of yours, but not so much as a kid then.
Yeah, no, how old would I be? 2009? 7-year-old me did not get on with this episode.
Don't blame me. As I say, I'm 26 and I still found it scary. So, yeah, not sure. And the thing is, as well, we were saying is we're not sure like how, like, because it's difficult with the BBC and, you know, it's primetime TV. It's before Watershed and everything like that. And they were walking a very, very fine line between it actually being what I would think is suitable for the kids and on a kids show and kind of what it would go over the line, something like Torchwood or, you know, kind of saying like that. So let's crack on with the questions then. As you can see, I'm really professional. I've got them all on my phone rather than memorized. So when did you first start watching Doctor Who then?
I was properly getting into it actually around the time that Wars and Mars came out. You know, my first episode, which I really got into, was Utopia.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The first part of the series, free finale. Mm-hmm. As I said, I was only five, but I remember we like saved it on DVD or something.
Yeah.
I've still got the whole like series 1 to 4 collection.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. I'm a big fan of DVDs. I much prefer, I mean, don't get it, streaming now and everything, it makes it easier, but it's just something about having a DVD and having a collection, like an actual collection. You've lost that now, haven't you, really?
Yeah. And I actually have Fear Her on there, which is not on the iPlayer anymore, so.
No, again, we spoke about this last week, I think it was last week before. I mean, as far as we're aware, they're bringing Fear Her back. But of course they're going to edit it first and everything. And that's the whole thing about having a physical copy. They can't take it away or edit it. That is the raw version of what you got. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if Wars and Mars had been the one that they took off, I would have started petitions to get it back.
Yeah, no, exactly. So yeah, so Utopia was kind of like the first one that you probably remember.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, I seem to remember my parents trying to get me to watch Doctor Who, and I think it was the Blink, and mm-hmm. 5-year-old me did not survive that episode either. Yeah.
I mean, that episode of Blink is just brilliant, and you know the fact that it's not even a Doctor or companion heavy episode, it is just actually just people that were there, you know, just random civilians. So yeah, okay, cool, good stuff. But so the next question I've got, and when I won't judge you, Brad and Josh might, but who is your favourite Doctor?
So, I mean, David Tennant is definitely up there, and I would probably say he's the best.
Okay.
But, yep. I mean, maybe it's me being biased because, as I said, I grew up with this Doctor, but Matt Smith.
Okay, interesting.
I've always said that Matt Smith is my favourite.
Yeah.
Like, whilst I can definitely say that David Tennant is probably the best, and it is like, if I picture the Doctor, I always picture David Tennant in my head, especially when we're watching Wars of Mars again. I was like, okay, this is this is how Doctor Who's meant to be. But yeah, no, Matt Smith, I love Matt Smith.
Okay, interesting. But that does bring me on to my next question. What is the coolest bit of Doctor Who merch you've seen or you've got, or what are you thinking?
So, yeah, I don't know if it actually technically counts as merch, but... Okay. Since 2010, I have had a cardboard cutout of the TARDIS super glued to my bedroom door. It is still there now.
Nice, cool, yeah, good stuff.
I don't think it's coming off with the door in any.
Just moves and he just takes the door with him. He's just like, no, it's not coming off. That's
if
it.
We sell the house, I think it's just going to have to come with the cardboard cutout of the TARDIS on the door, just as part of it. I think that will be better than seeing what's under the door.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I mean, is it kind of the size of the door? Hello. Is it the size of the door or is it kind of a little smaller?
Oh, yeah, no, it covers the entire door.
Brilliant. Love it. Love it. No, good stuff. And I mean, have you seen anything that, you know, that anybody's had and you thought, oh, that is really good? Because I've been to a few Comic-Cons. I know that Brad and I are trying to look to go to a few as well. And I've got to say, some of the stuff over there, I mean, A, it's incredibly expensive, but B, it does look really cool. Anything you've seen that you're kind of secretly jealous of someone having? Or
I mean, I was actually at the Doctor Who Proms on Monday, and that was amazing. And I dressed up a bit. I put on a blue suit, had the burgundy red Converse, but nice. People were dressed ridiculously good, like fully accurate.
Yeah.
I saw someone with like David Tennant's long flowy coat. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna steal that. But
yeah, no, I've got to say, we did actually, funny enough, in the Who News this week, we spoke, like, you know, we've been speaking about you know, kind of the BBC problems and everything. And it, from what we saw, it looked phenomenal. It really did. So, so you were actually there, were you?
Yeah, and I met Russell Davis as well. So
really, well, I tell you what, you've suddenly become the coolest person we've ever had on the podcast, and that's including me, Josh, and Brad as well. You know, so brilliant. And what's he like as a person? I mean, was it? Did you just?
I mean, he seemed great in the 10 seconds that I had, but this was in the interval, and I managed to. You could see where he was. Catherine Tate, who was hosting, she was brilliant.
Yeah.
As always, but she called him out, and then he was just waving in the audience. I think everyone kind of knew where he was, but I just skipped off just before the interval. I managed to get there like first or second, and then get a photo and get his autograph as well.
Brilliant.
By the time I'd done that, there was probably a line all the way around at here, the Albert Hall.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. So you briefly met Russell T Davies. You got a photo. Anything else?
And problems, you know? Briefly met Stephen Moffat as well.
Really?
Him as well.
Nice.
They were in the same box.
Brilliant. I mean, that's incredible. Absolutely incredible. So, so are you going to try and go? Is it? I'm assuming it's a yearly thing, isn't it? Or is it?
I mean, I think it's. It was meant to be. I mean, Matt Smith got two. I actually went to both anyway, back in 2010 and 2013.
Okay.
Matt Smith had one each. And I think David Tennant also had one in 2007.
Yeah.
But then there hasn't been one since 2013.
Gotcha.
I don't know if they're now make it a yearly thing, because the problems obviously cycle every year. So I feel like no one really complained if it was every year, but it did kind of feel special coming back after 14 years or something.
So moving on, who is your favourite companion?
Donna.
Oh.
I feel like I have a memory of you not liking Donna.
It's not that I don't like Donna. But she's my least favorite. She's just very shouty, very loud, you know. And but I will say though, she of all the companions, she does have the funniest lines.
Yeah, I didn't particularly like her in her first episode, but I think in series four, she's brilliant, especially when. She utilizes that the comedy, like in Unicorn and the Wasp and Partners in Crime. But I think she's actually quite good at the serious moments as well. Like Fires of Pompeii is one of my favorite Donna moments.
Yeah, no, that is true. That is true. And so the final question of the of this interview is Walters and Mars. Love it or hate it?
Love it. That it's one of these. It's 10 out of 10. It's 10 out of 10 writing, 10 out of 10 acting, 10 out of 10 on the scare factor as well.
Yeah. To be honest, I'd have been really surprised if you'd turn around and just like, nope, I hate it. Don't like it. It's, you know, rubbish episode. No, it's, yeah, no, brilliant. It's as close to perfect as you could come. So, well, what I've seen with Doctor Who so far. Thank you very much for joining us here.
My pleasure.
You know, really do appreciate it. Hopefully we can get you back on the podcast at some point as well.
Oh, thank you very much.
Conversations with Companions.
Wow, Jack, how was that? We were listening through the door. It sounded amazing.
he was listening all the way from Dubai. That's impressive. Don't say what, Big Brother never listens.
I love movie magic and editing. It's my favorite part about doing this podcast.
Yeah, but no, goes without saying though, guys, if you do want to appear on the podcast and you do want to, you know, just chat to me, just give us your thoughts about the podcast, as I said, we just are, you know, asking a few questions, we just want to get to know you guys and what you think. And so if you do want to appear, drop us a DM on Twitter, Instagram. Can you do DMs on TikTok?
I don't know, let's go over to our Gen Zedder,
the resident Bradley. TikToker.
Sorry, what's up?
Oh,
can you DM on a TikTok?
Yeah, you can drop me a DM on TikTok. You know, there we go. Our most liked platform with almost 1,000 followers now. So
nice. Well, there we go. Hope you enjoyed that new segment. Thank you very much, Matthew Roberts, for coming on. I really liked that thing you said about that thing. It was really insightful. Shall we crack on with our review of Waters of Mars?
I think we should.
Finally.
Finally, we are here. The best episode of Doctor Who of all time. I was trying to force myself to make notes throughout this episode, but I really did find myself just absolutely hooked. One that I had just recurring throughout it so many times, and I thought, no, I can't write about this anymore. Let's put it to the top. The music, the score in this episode is unreal, like noticeably good. Please tell me I wasn't the only one that picked up on that.
Oh, you're going to be upset.
Oh, what? You didn't like it, JP?
No, it's not that I did like it. I just didn't notice it.
How can you not notice it?
Go on.
No, in my opinion, I think the reason you probably don't notice it as much is because, throughout the first four series, I think the score and the music of Doctor Who is just class all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was any different to usual. I just think it was really good. And it just always just blends into the episodes well. And that's something that I think they've missed in new series. I think this first era always hits with the music.
I agree. Yeah, I just thought this was a particular example of how good it is. Like, this used music to create dramatic tension, which it often does, but never to this degree. I thought this, honestly, just excellent.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say about the music, the music is not, unless it's something really, really significant, I don't really catch it because I'm there to watch what's happening. Because this is my first time watching, right? I'm interested. I'm trying to work out what's going on. You know, I'm trying to make sense of everything. I just miss the music. It's just the one thing that I don't really pay attention to. Like, I'm sure if I was to rewatch it again, and you know, like the viewpoint that you and Brad have, and the fact that you guys have seen this God knows how many times, you can sit down and you can like, oh yeah, actually, you know what, the music's really good in this point, or it could be better in this point. Whereas my first time viewing, I'm just watching it to just watch it.
Yeah, I tell you what would be interesting though is if we could find an unscored version of not necessarily a Doctor Who thing, but something that you knew well, just to see how much it shifted the tone. There is one example later on where David Tennant is in the space suit. He's about to, or I think they've just done the airlock scene, and he walks out, and he can hear their chatter over the radio, and just like there's. The score is playing and it's sort of dramatic and tense and exciting as he exits. And then the score stops and then it becomes almost like he's being haunted by these voices. Like it's a complete tonal shift just by cutting the music there. So I'd love we should do it as an experiment. Just watch something that we know unscored and see how it changes our perception of what we're watching, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like Star Wars. Something like Star Wars. The music is iconic.
Yeah, but it's important as well. Like, it wouldn't work without the music, I don't think.
But you'd never watch it without the music, would you? It always has it. It would be weird without it. It wouldn't be a normal film or series.
Yeah, true, true.
So, yeah, you're always going to say it's shit.
I just think it's we shouldn't downplay how important music is, but
I think you should compare it to the perfect comparison is this era to Jodie's era, because I think the score was shocking in that era and it didn't hit the same at all.
Was it as
that
shocking
shows how good a score
or
is.
Was it just not as nostalgia driven? Because even the new score is tones of this, really.
I like the new score though, and it's nothing to do with nostalgia.
I think it is though, because it is, it's not completely new. There's no way you can say it's completely new.
It is, it's the same composer, but it's new. It's still no, there's no similarities to now.
Are you mad? There's so many similarities till now.
Like what?
It's innovated on, but it's not new.
If anything, it's just more Disney.
I don't know. Oh, one last note before we move on is they play the Bad Wolf theme when he's doing the Time Lord Victorious sort of speech. That's how excellently crafted the score is in this episode. I love it. I didn't mean to spend 5 minutes talking about it, so apologies for that. Just wanted to say music, top tier here. Absolutely top tier. Nice. Yeah, someone insert that weird meme thing. The cold open, pretty good job at contextualizing the situation, introducing the ragtag team of scientists, very alien-esque. That gadget cliffhanger, JP, I can imagine your face dropping at that revelation.
Yeah, it was Brad pointed this out while we was watching it, and actually the bloke that commandeers Gadget, should we say,
Yes,
he's a bit of a
Charlton.
waste of space really, isn't he?
He's just doing what the robot's doing, but with gloves. Like, it's so stupid. It's so stupid.
And as Brad said, like they make a big, like the commander makes a big fuss of the bike thing, and oh well, it takes an extra 3 tons of fuel or some bollocks like that, and you're like, you've literally got a spare man here who is dealing with a, like, surely the technology is good enough to have that bloke at home remote control the robot.
Yes. There's one bit where she's like, keep the gun on him, and the robot's pointing the gun, but he's pointing the robot to point the gun. It's like, just hold the gun, man. What, you don't need the robot for this. Does he not have batteries or something that are about to be used up? But yeah, I didn't even think of that. Keep that guy on Earth. He can be, because my biggest problem with this episode is the ending. How do they ever explain that they got from Bowie Base One back to Earth, and like, how did she commit suicide in her room? Just jump, like, if you had someone remoting onto the ship constantly to control Gadget, he could have a record, or he could explain. Do you know what I mean? Like, that could bridge that sort of confusion that's left for me, maybe.
What do you mean, how they get that?
So think about it. They're the three that survive, Adelaide and the other two, they were supposed to die on Mars. They were on Mars on the 21st of November 2059, whenever it was. But David Tennant takes them back in the TARDIS to the same day. The base has blown up. Adelaide's supposed to be on that base in Mars, but she's found dead in her home. How's that
What's
explained? What's the police officers
why
going to
why
say?
would it need to be explained? They're not going to know how she got back, and they never will find out unless they
But
tell the
that's my
story.
point. Like, what the? Could you imagine? That's like Madeleine McCann sort of mystery, but times 10. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but at this point I guess everyone does kind of know about aliens and stuff, so the other two could have just said, like, oh, this mysterious man took us back in this time thing.
Maybe. Sounds sus though, didn't it? Whole base on Mars blows up. One of them shows up dead on Earth, and then there's another two that have just survived. I don't know. You'd be raising questions with the two survivors, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I
No,
mean,
I
the other thing
agree.
you could say is, like, obviously we know, like, torture and stuff is around at this point. If you take, like, the Ratigan episode as an example, they have an example of a teleport that works, right? They don't have the other end of it. Surely they've de
Okay.
developed teleports at some point.
Yeah, maybe you. Yeah, if they ever question it, maybe UNIT or Torture would come in and they say, actually,
Yeah, they
yeah, it
just
probably
say,
was the doctor. Yeah, I
yeah,
suppose.
exactly.
So yeah, just talking about Adelaide though. Oh, the best companion that never was.
Oh
No.
yeah, you know what?
What?
I do think she would have been a really good companion.
Why?
I don't know, it's just, I think that's probably the closest, like she did everything by the book. Everything. And
She's a captain. She's not a companion. She's captain of a ship.
no.
It would have been an
But she,
interesting dynamic. You're right. I'm not sure companion's the right task for her. But as an equal to the doctor, what a
yeah,
fascinating character.
like everything she
Yeah.
did was for the crew. It wasn't for her, it's for the crew. And then that's double, they then double down, the writers then double down, and they say, right, you're doing it for your grandkid.
Yeah, or for the future of humanity. Like, oh
Yeah, it's
man,
straight up, isn't it?
just what a woman. And also, I know you guys boys are gonna laugh. Absolutely fit as fuck. Sorry, but she
I knew
just
you'd
is.
say that.
There
You're
is
gonna
just
say
something
that.
about a strong, independent woman. She can take control of me anytime she wants. No problem.
Jesus
Yes, ma'am.
Christ.
And I love,
Oh,
I don't even think I ever realized. She's listed in the credits, like the opening credits, and I fucking love that. Amazing.
she really?
Yeah, she's David Tennant, Lindsay Duncan. Yes, Lindsay, go
wow.
on, girl. I also love her in Sherlock, but I think they're the only two things I've really seen her in.
Who is she in Sherlock?
She works with Mycroft. I think they end up like getting together in one of the later series.
Really?
Gemma Chan is also in this as well, of
Eternals.
There you go. Another famous Doctor Who alumni. I think there's quite a few of them in Matt Smith's era, to be fair. Olivia Colman from memory is one. Can't think of anyone else off the top of my head.
What is in the Matt Smith era or this one?
Yeah, no, Matt Smith is. Yeah. Like there's a few more famous people to come, but Olivia Colman's the only one I can think of. There's one moment where one of the crew is inspecting the Doctor's spacesuit. And she says, I've never seen anything like it before. Really? It's a spacesuit.
Well, surely they had them as well.
It's an Earth spacesuit, maybe from a little bit in the future, but it's from the Satan pit. Like, you know what what are you talking about? You know what a spacesuit is.
Yeah, like, you know what? I have a question about the spacesuit as well. Because the Doctor at the start just walks out the TARDIS. And there's two things. One, he just walks out the TARDIS without knowing where it is in a spacesuit.
Yeah, like, how did he... looked on the TARDIS to see there was no oxygen.
Yeah, okay. That's fair enough. Yeah, no, I'll give you that. And then he just walks out and goes, oh, the red planet. There's no one around for him to say that to. Does he just narrate things when there's nobody else around? He just talks to
them. No, it's for us, the audience. It's for us. It's like James Bond and his quips. He's talking to us.
Okay.
Also, as if you don't just talk to yourself.
Well, this is the equivalent of, and there's been a lot of rage, I think, about it in recent series. I think the equivalent of David Tennant walking out and saying the red planet is obviously telling you it's Mars. And you know how in recent series, instead of having that line, I think they just seem to like pan to a new location and put up like, they'll put up like Mars 2050 or something.
Yeah,
you'll hate that.
Yeah.
I prefer this a lot, to be fair.
I don't mind it.
What, the title card?
Yeah, the title card. I don't mind it because, like, I think it's a less clumsy way of doing it. Unless, don't get me wrong, unless you've got, like, you know, you can make it work, so you've got other people there or something like that. I don't dislike it.
Do you never just,
Literally the doctor talking to himself.
No, I think it's perfectly natural. Like, do you never get in the car and be like, right, okay, we're off to thingy? Like, you just sort of say it to yourself, don't you? If you get caught, be like, fucking twat. Like, you don't say it in the head, you say it out loud, don't you?
Yeah.
No, well, that's different, though. I don't just turn up to Tesco's and go, Tesco's.
Do you not? Sometimes I will pull up, especially when I'm at the supermarket, and I go, oh, fucking Waitrose, here we go. Like, you never do that?
No, I don't think I'd do that. No.
Fair
we'll
enough.
Do it tonight. We'll go shopping, JP. Oh,
Ali, yeah. Oh, little.
no, fair enough. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. The horror, like, this is a scary episode. This is as creepy as it gets. The first bit where the guy drops to the ground in the background and it's not even in focus, and it's 6 minutes into the episode. This episode is so fast-paced. But it doesn't feel rushed at any point. It's just pure excitement. It's pure climax. And that minute, it's exactly as the 6 minute goes from the start of the episode. So that's including credits. He drops to the floor. He starts doing his little shaking thing. Fuck me. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
I agree. And there is a tiny kind of little, I suppose actually, it is technically part of the music and the sound. Because when the doctor's going about, oh, this is the base, and he starts going around naming the crew, and you get that little kind of sharp cut to like a Wikipedia page, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just before the first one gets turned. And like, you just get that kind of like the dramatic, it's almost like a, I don't know what you call it, like a camera shutter thing, like a, you know the sound effect I'm on about.
Like a clip.
It's not like
a
drum. Yeah, it's not like a drum beat. It's not like a clip. It's almost like a camera shutter going off.
Yeah,
they do it all the time in like kind of crime documentaries and you know, something where it's almost like you're at a crime scene. It's, oh, there's a photo, there's a, and I love that because it's just like these people are gonna die.
Well, I literally had that note. Jack, you mentioned it last week with Planet of the Dead that you thought they were going to kill them all off like they did with Voyage of the Damned. So
Yeah.
presumably you're a fan of that. No, these people are going to die. You're just here to watch how they die.
Yeah, no, 100%. And look, this is without turning this into, it's why I prefer Aliens over Alien, because you kind of get that full sense of security, you know, because we always think safety in numbers, you know, that kind of thing. And with Aliens, you've got these kind of, you know, kind of hardcore Marines, you know, who are going there, they're going to kill all the aliens and everything like that. And then within the first like kind of 10 minutes of contact, they're down to not even half their numbers. They're fucking dead.
That's it,
And that
man. Game
it's a
over,
game
man.
over. Game over, man. Bill Paxton, one of Bill Paxton's best lines. But like it just that but that is the thing, and that's why I love about this, is because you kind of you get that full sense of security. You're like, oh, there's a lot of them. Oh, they might be all right, the doctor might be able to kind of like wangle his way through it and everything, and then he's just like, no, we're gonna kill him.
Is
And I love that.
no, it's pretty good. I do have a note. I think I mentioned it up top as well. It does feel very alien, especially with the dreadlocked woman who gets infected but doesn't show straight away, and they put her in quarantine and she has the turn. That's all very alien.
Yeah.
They're running down that corridor when they first meet that girl. I've completely forgotten her name, Madge or something like that. I remember.
It sounds right.
Yes, thanks, mate. Get a little canine reference. The doctor gets called out for being robot racist, I suppose.
That's right, because then he says about oh, I knew someone that made a robot dog or something.
Yeah, like, can you imagine? It's so stupid. They made a robot dog. And the doctor's like, oh, actually, dogs are cool. Like, what are you talking about? Who would do that? A cool guy.
K9 is better than Gadget Gadget, let's be honest.
I want to hear Jack's opinion on this because I like them both, obviously.
K9 doesn't have Sonic control with him for starters.
Yeah, I suppose K9's technically more intelligent, but at least Gadget Gadget was less annoying. I do have
Really?
an
How
issue.
can you possibly say that?
I
All it says is
do have
Gadget
it.
Gadget.
I do have an issue with Gadget Gadget, though. What
Go
does
on.
Gadget Gadget even mean?
We're skipping forward a bit
Okay,
to the
let's.
bit. Look, yeah, we'll get there when we get there. But yeah, no, I don't know. They're
Get there when
both.
we get there.
If
Well,
I
talking
had
of
to,
how did we
oh, sorry.
get. Oh, sorry, go on, go on.
I was gonna say, if I had to choose between a robot that could do things on its own or a robot that I had to control, I'd have to choose a robot that did stuff on its own. I don't want to sit around and control a robot all the time.
There you go. It's official. Jack likes K9.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, in one context, yeah.
So they run down this corridor and they find this dreadlocked woman, you know, unconscious, knock on the head, sat in the corridor. How did she get there? And why? Presumably, she got taken by Andy. Why did Andy stay in the? Like, how? What's the logistics behind all of that?
I don't understand, because they also turn off the cameras and the lights, didn't they?
Yeah.
Because the camera goes and they go, oh, cut to the external camera, and then you just see the lights in the greenhouse just start going off, and then that's what spurs them to go over there. Why turn out the lights? Oh, I don't know. Didn't really understand the plan there. And then the other thing I don't understand as well, you've got old Captain fucking by the book over there, and she's like, right, you're not out of my sight to the doctor, but by the way, let's split up and look for clues.
I think yeah, you're right. You're right. I don't think that
I'm
makes any
like,
sense.
you've done everything by the book up until, and I know it's for the plot and everything like that, but like, you got this, they make a point of as well. Like, they have the thing where, the conversation where one of the astronauts puts the no trespassers sign outside, and the second in command bloke's like, oh, no jokes. Oh, that's a waste of thing. And then she comes off and she berates that guy for just being a killjoy, really. But like, you know.
Yeah, I expect it. That was all very odd.
Yeah.
With regards to turning the lights off, I think it's their plan to infect and initiate the evacuation, right? So I think that's how you can sort of justify they're trying to scare them into evacuating, so turn the lights off and stuff like that. I think that's probably
Okay.
fair.
Yeah. I thought it was just going to be dramatic effect, to be honest, for the film, for the show.
Well, there is that, but that doesn't give it an in-universe explanation, which is what we're after here. We have to pretend this is real for the 40 minutes that we do this bloody podcast.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right, so they just find her. They take her back to quarantine. And again, it's not quite the chestbuster scene from Alien, but that transformation when, you know, he's looking at Earth and, well, he's looking at his gay brothers and talking about just the most boring, undescriptive story you've ever heard. Tell us what car. Tell us what birthday. So vague, so nothingy. But that transformation, again, absolutely terrified. And in particular, the makeup is so fucked up in this episode.
Oh, fuck me. I tell you what, the special effects people who do the, I don't even know what the, do you call it prosthetics, makeup? You know what I'm on about, like the kind of the actual practical effects. They fucking went like overboard, big time. And like down to the point of where they've actually got, I mean, there was a few laughable scenes where they were like, one of them turns into pretty much a fucking Squirtle. And you can tell that they've just sellotaped a hose to the side of his face. Like, they're just like, right, turn and look away from the cameras just so you can't see the hose. But there are certain points in there that I'm just like, how did they do that? Like, there's a part where I think she starts dribbling.
But it just, like, doesn't stop.
Yeah, it doesn't stop. And I'm sitting there thinking, how did they do it? Because it's obviously it's practical, because it's the water is actually reacting how water would, you know. And I'm like, how the fuck did they do that? Did they just have, did she have like a small reservoir in like a kind of a mouthpiece or something? Like, it just, oh, mate, it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Like, and the acting as well. I mean, that part where she breaks out of quarantine and she just like screams. Like, oh, man, that's.
Oh, that scream is horrifying. Yeah.
Oh, man. Like,
The whole thing just feels super, super big budget. By the way, Bowie Base One. What a name for a base, and what a set as well.
I can't believe it took you this long to actually mention that, to be
I
fair.
I can't believe it. Is there life on Mars? Ziggy Stardust and the spiders from Mars? Of course it is. And genuinely, probably not that unrealistic as well. If the UK ever did put a colony on Mars, there would be some Bowie reference in there somewhere. There just
I was about
be,
to say... Yeah, I was about to say, what do you think they even call it that? But now you've just absolutely nailed that on the head, to be honest. Yeah,
because
Bowie
is famously the spaceman.
Yeah.
It feels big budget, this episode, but this fascinated me when I read it, and I don't know if it's true or not. It was cancelled, like they completely pulled this episode because of the 2008 financial crash. They said, we can't have three specials, like, this is not going to be made. And they've somehow managed to wrangle it. Yeah, it was just going to be the Christmas special, Planet of the Dead, and then straight into this. Because the way they did it was Planet of the Dead was important because it was the first mention of the four knocks. And then they were like, but this doesn't have anything to do with it. This is a random special, so pull it. And I think Judy Gardner or whoever Russell's partner was the one that fought for it and eventually got it made. But considering it had a reduced budget because of the financial crash, like, what they've done with this episode is insane. Like, it is absolutely insane.
Yeah, this is basically what Wild Blue Yonder was dreaming of being.
Well, funnily enough, Bradley, that leads me on to my next note, which is becoming a bit of a recurring scene on this, recurring theme on this podcast. It's a CGI hallway with people being chased down it, and they're all going at different speeds, yet they all arrive at the same time. Yeah. Yet it kind of works here, doesn't it? When they jump on Gadget and he somehow, you know, Vin Diesel, he turns the NOS on and they fucking gun it down the hallway.
Yeah, that's going to take on to my next point. God.
My point is, like, it's stupid. It doesn't work. It's a waste of... What is the point of it? Was Segways cool at the time?
I don't think I have an issue with these corridors, because I think the fact that they go in like different directions to different domes and stuff, I think makes it make sense compared to Wild Beyond, which is one long corridor, which is awful. And the Segways is just a good way to get around. Obviously, they're light and compact, like they say, whereas bikes are heavy. What's the issue?
No, I get all of that, but my point, like, yeah, of course it makes sense, but there's one particular bit where Doctor and Adelaide are running away, they're being chased, and they jump on and they supersonic gadget, which the whole thing lasts about 15 seconds. What's the point of that? What does that add to the story? I suppose maybe it sets up that he can get across Mars quickly later, but just have them run. I don't, like, why? None
Yeah,
of it
I
made
guess they catch
sense.
up pretty quick as well, don't they? The water people,
They're
they catch up
literally
really
right
quick.
behind them when they get off. It's like you could have just said you were running ahead of them. I don't get
Yeah,
it.
true.
It's so odd. It's the worst part of this fantastic episode. So strange.
Well, in fairness, they did the doctor does say that there was a that they were quicker, and that was the whole reason Gadget was a kind of they jumped on. But like that is
But the
yeah.
point is, like, Russell T. Davis wrote, they can run quicker, so they need to jump on Gadget. Just
Yeah.
say they can't run, just, just because they're water creatures. Why make them, why say they can run faster? Just have them be roughly the same speed. Don't jump on Gadget. Save a bit of VFX budget. And it's not a stupid scene that's going to age poorly. That said, I genuinely don't mind it. I think it is just a nonsense bit in
I've
this
got to
episode.
say,
Oh,
let's be honest,
God.
it actually gives, apart from the ending, it actually gives Gadget a purpose. Because let's be honest, there's no other reason for him apart from that speed bit, and then when it goes to the TARDIS at the end, there's
Yeah,
no other purpose for that
that's
robot.
what it has to be. It has to be showing, at least like foreshadowing, sort of that Gadget can
Yeah.
zoot fly across the things of Mars. But do it in
Like,
another way.
unless I've
Nonsense.
missed, yeah, but unless I've missed something massive here, but what actually is the purpose of Gadget in terms of the actual space? What does
Secure,
the
isn't it?
robot do?
He goes
Security
outside
for
without
what?
having to put a suit on.
To do what?
Well, he's putting up the solar panels at the beginning.
Okay, fair enough. But
It's
then someone
like,
can still just put a suit on and go and do that.
yeah, but I suppose it's using up less oxygen because he even says at the beginning, get inside your user. I don't know. It's nonsense. It's so that they can
I
jump on
think it's
him
a
and
pointless robot, yeah.
it's a pointless robot.
It's a way of getting the TARDIS back at the end, literally.
It's so pointless, in fact, that Jack prefers K9 over him. I actually have one more interesting point on that. You just raised it there about just getting the TARDIS back at the end. Russell T. Davis has come out in an interview and said he tries and avoids that sort of solution to every story because otherwise the answer is why doesn't he just call in the TARDIS at the last minute every time? And the point is supposed to be that because he's gone so far with the Time Lord Victorious, he's made that decision to cheat in the sense that, well, I'll just call the TARDIS and we'll leave. It's sort of that one
Yeah.
removed thing, and that's why we don't see it happen in
He
normal
doesn't want
stories.
to
Yeah, exactly. It's because he's taken that one, which I thought was really interesting to be fair, because, yeah, he's got a time machine. Like, why does he not just go back in time 30 seconds and tell them, like, do you know what I mean? I just thought it was really interesting.
do it,
But yeah, Gadget's a waste of time.
yeah. Well, the thing that really annoyed me about Gadget as well, and it's a practical thing. I don't think he runs on petrol, does he?
I
We're
don't
establishing that
know.
he's an
I
electric
don't
robot,
know.
right? And then suddenly the doctor, kind of twats around with him and he becomes a, kind of a speedy electric scooter that also shoots flames out of an exhaust, or not one exhaust, but two exhausts as well. And I'm like, one, you're in a space base. There's quite a high concentration of oxygen. Fires are like one of the worst things you can fucking have. And two, where'd the fire come from? If he's electric, there's no petrol to burn.
Yeah, but Jack, you're forgetting the sonic screwdriver is basically magic.
Not a fan of that. I
Yeah,
just, I mean, it did make me chuckle because, again, it's like the Back to the Future thing with the two lines of fire after. And I was like, okay, that's quite clever.
of my favorite moments of this episode is the flashback to Stolen Earth. I think tying it all into that, and that being the reason that Adelaide, got her motivation to set off in this adventure.
Yeah, I
Fucking
love that, to be fair.
fantastic.
I don't know why they gave me Sarah Jane vibes when the Dalek comes down in the
I
you
can
can see them through the
kind of
window.
see that. Yeah. It
I don't know
feels a
why.
bit like the attic with Mr. Smith, I guess,
Yeah,
but I sort of get it.
literally.
And the CGI is a bit iffy. The Dalek doesn't look perfect, I don't think. He goes on to explain that the Dalek probably didn't kill her because the Dalek knew it was going to be Adelaide and go off and you know, it's protected in time and all that shit. Why would the Dalek give a fuck about that?
Maybe the Dalek knows it can't kill her though.
Yeah.
But why?
She is part of a fixed point. So a Dalek, even a Dalek can't change a fixed point. Or shouldn't be able to.
Potentially, yeah. I just thought that because they can't time travel, let's not forget. The only one that ever did was so like it's just I don't know, I just thought that was quite again, I like it in the sense that it shows her importance and it ties it all back and it's an absolutely brilliant moment, but I'm a bit like one, the Dalek shouldn't know she, like we don't know what a fixed point in time is. Do you know, like we couldn't tell it from Harry or Larry, so why is a Dalek able to, who's
Yeah,
famously
but we're
not a time
human,
traveler?
and a Dalek must have some sort of way of reading things, like observing.
Not sure I'm sold on it, but still, what an amazing bit. What do we think about the whole infections come through the water and it's very lucky that the filter only broke yesterday, so they're not all infected?
I like it because, again, humans have to survive. They need three things, don't they? Oxygen, water, and food. Suddenly, one of those three things is, potentially causing the infection. And especially where you're in an environment where water is not easy to get.
Yeah, it definitely ups the tension, doesn't it?
Yeah, and again, it's the whole mystery, because overall the doctor knows that this base is doomed. And my original theory was that he was going to be the one that caused the asteroid to hit the base.
Oh, okay.
Like that was my theory. I was going to be one of those ones where, he causes the asteroid to hit the base because it's got to blow up to contain this infection or whatever. So I thought they were going to go from that angle, but then suddenly you've got he's trying to do everything he can to subtly keep the crew there.
Oh, do you think he is trying to keep the crew there? I don't think he is
100%.
at any point.
No, because he goes against their evacuation thing. As soon as she says about, oh yeah, we'll do like kind of what do they call it, Protocol One or Directive
Oh,
One,
yeah.
something one. Straight away he goes, well, no, other people could be infected. You just don't know about it.
Yeah, true. That's a good point,
You know,
actually.
he's
Yeah.
he's against like he is against everything that the captain suggests because he wants to keep the crew there because he knows he has to keep the crew there.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Fair enough.
Which is really weird because like so I think this is one of the few rare times that during the episode he's actually trying to save himself.
Yeah, we don't often see him being. Well, we don't often see him refusing to help, I think is the main thing. Just he's like, no, I need to leave. And I do love those little moments. And again, Brad will, back me up on this, but David Tennant is on absolute fire this episode. And
This is up there with his best acting performance, in my opinion.
100%. Like it,
The bit at
from
the
his
end gave
little,
me chills.
well, just all the little bits throughout where he's like, you can see he's actually wrestling with himself. I need to leave. I
Yeah.
need to leave. I need to leave. Fantastic. The bit I've just got a note here that when he's back in his space suit, and I think I mentioned it up top, but they're all running around, panicking,
And he
trying to
just
do this
stares
evacuation.
watching.
Oh my God. And what I
Yeah.
love though is he's in his bright blue suit with his bright orange space suit on a complete white background, and they're all wearing muted greens. It's beautiful. And his little derp, sort of just about to start crying face. Oh
Yeah.
man, I can honestly. I watched this episode about an hour ago. I could put this episode on and watch it again. It's that fucking good. And it's like
Yeah.
that middle bit is just insane. When he finally makes that decision to leave, it's insane. Just a genuine heads up, boys, and everybody listening. My notes from this point out are I love this bit, I love that bit, I love that. I loved it when that happened, I loved it when that happened. So this is not an insightful sort of breakdown podcast anymore. Starting with the bit with Adelaide and the doctor when the doctor is in the airlock. Wow. Just wow.
Which bit's that again? I'm not gonna lie, I haven't watched this for quite a while, but
Reach tries to hop out.
bit more detail, a bit more detail, lads.
Well, he's trying to leave.
She's
He's
locked him in the airlock and she's like, I need you to tell me what the hell is going on. And he's like,
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Just again, he's David Tennant is being filmed with a helmet on, with a blue light in the helmet shining on his face. And yet the emotion that he's conveying, and most of the time we see him as a recording on a screen in the it's like, oh, this is a very good contender for David Tennant being the best Doctor. Like, I'm just like,
and it's true anyway. I don't know how you don't see it. I mean, my favorite bit that you're probably going to mention as well, it's just the actual emotion about when he comes back to save them and he just starts like screaming, like, the laws of time are mine. That line is just, that's like the one of the best lines in Doctor Who, in my opinion.
We're like, not just fighting water, he's the Doctor. We're fighting time itself, and I'm gonna win.
That bit as well. Oh, it's class,
man. Time Lord Victorious David Tennant is next level. Like, it truly, or it, like, as soon as, so the last thing I want to say about that airlock bit is, he goes, you know, who's going to save you, Doctor? And he goes, no, you are Captain Adelaide. And then she lets him out and just says, damn you. And just like her acceptance of the fate, the Doctor acceptance of his fate that he's got to let these people die. And he just wanders off. And, it, you know, again, I mentioned it up top, the score stops and it goes from being high tension to haunting voices in his head. And then, like you said, Brad, he just comes back in and the Bad Wolf theme starts playing. He has his Time Lord Victorious moment. Even just the echoes of him telling himself he's the last of the Time Lord. It's like, it genuinely feels like this is what the past 5 years of Doctor Who has been leading to. Does it not?
Yeah, 100%. I can't explain, honestly. I can't even put into words how important this end of an episode is for David Tennant and for his Doctor. To lead into the finale as well, like, this is him, this is it,
this is, yeah, this is how I think I will always remember David Tennant's Doctor, for sure. It's just unbelievable. Like, even when, so they obviously, they go through all their explosions, and some of the deaths there, I know they reel through them quite quickly, every single death feels quite dramatic, from, you know, the blonde Russian lady or German watching her kids on the screen.
The room, yeah.
Yeah, and then the water just hits her and she starts crying. The, you know, deputy captain on the ship, and he just doesn't quite push the button in time. Even to the kid, you know, the useless gadget kid, just that drop landing on his, all of it, you know, it's obviously it's rushed through. It's only, what, a 45, 50 minute episode. Everything has such a huge impact in this episode. Just that sort of 15, 20 minutes when they escape, pure excitement and as good as Doctor Who gets, I think.
It just works so well. In my opinion, I wouldn't change a thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with this ending. It might be quick, but it's perfect.
No, but I think they've made it quick on purpose. And this is going to go back to what I was saying earlier in terms of lulling the audience into a false sense of security. Because then suddenly you've got this kind of like, you're like, oh, actually, they are going to escape. And then suddenly it just goes horrifically wrong. And it's not like kind of one person dies and you get a little bit of chit-chat, another bit of, it's bang, 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 bang. And then suddenly it is just the Doctor and the Captain. And that is it. I know, actually, there's two other
the other two expendables.
But that is it, you know. And then suddenly you've just got all of these characters that you've had all episodes build up with, and you're like, they're going to make it. They're going to be all right. And, like, you know, that's why it's like, especially with the, you know, Gadget's controller, just that one drop. And it's so sad. It's, you know, you're like, damn, like, you know, it was just one drop. He could have made it. You know,
it's also, him in particular, it's also quite frustrating because it's almost like he looks at the drip come down. And listen, like, you can see a drip. You never have enough time to move out of the way of a drip. You get drips on all the time. But it's filmed in, so it's like, oh man, like, you could have got through that. You've been beaten by a drip. It's so upsetting. It's emotional. And what I really love, and it gets mentioned earlier on in the episode as well, this is the exact same episode, really, as the fires of Pompeii, right down to the TARDIS materializing at the end, saving the people that thought they had no hope. And they even shine the same blue light on everyone's face that they shone on Peter Capaldi's and his family's thing. But when they land in London, like, the vibe is off. It's totally different. You know, Gemma Chan's like, who the fuck are you? And what is that box? Like, it's so interesting to see, you know, other people's interpretations of it. Because he has saved the day. Like, absolutely, he saved the day. But he's this thing that has invaded their base. Everything went wrong. He put them in a box and he's put them back on Earth. Like, it's, come on, fascinating, right? Flipping that ending of Pompeii, which is the first or second episode of series four.
Yeah, episode two.
Yes, episode two, isn't it? Yeah. It's, I mean, that's the thing. Again, it's a testament to the captain's character, because she, the doctor tells her that she is important and she must die in that spot. She's a, do they call it an anchor point?
A fixed point.
I can't remember what they call it.
Some death
fixed
ball, point. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she is fully willing to accept that. She's like, yeah, if I have to die, I'll die. That's it. And then suddenly the doctor, who's been waxing lyrical about, like, you know, oh, I can't change anything, you know, it's a fixed point, I can't do this, can't do that, suddenly changes something. And she is just like, who are you to decide the laws of time and what happens?
I love it so much.
Oh, man. And I'll tell you what, just the brutality of the fucking ending is, oh, it is a masterpiece. I've got to say, I've rarely been shocked in my watching of Doctor Who.
Yeah, you really were shocked, to be fair.
I was shocked. Genuinely, I was like, how, like, they didn't even, like, you know, they just had the blue or green outline of the, yeah, kind of the room lit up.
Yeah.
And it was just like, shit.
Yeah. How many kids' TV shows end in fucking suicide? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I just, oh, man, I'm getting chills thinking of it now. Like, it was just like such a,
an, it's wild, yeah. Moment.
Like, it just, oh, like, I just, sorry, I'm going to ramble on a bit here.
Okay,
but
okay.
Like, the thing is like, the whole thing about, you know, you either die to be, yeah, die a hero, or you live long enough to be the villain.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr.
Doctor,
looking at you.
The Doctor did that. What?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, he's become the villain, isn't he? Yeah.
Well, the Invictus thing, or what was it called? Time
the
Time
Invictus
of
the Sports. Yeah, Prince Harry shows up at the end.
What was he fucking called?
Time Lord Victorious.
Time Lord Victorious, right, yeah. To me, the Time Lord Victorious is Harvey Dent after his accident. Like, yeah, after he gets blown up by the Joker. That is it. He has become everything that he despises.
It's gonna be, have you watched next week's episode yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's only because we're doing our weird recording thing.
Yeah, no. Because he sort of learns his lesson and he looks very humbled at the end of this episode. And, you know, he sees the Ood who just magically appears. I've got a few questions on that. Gets in the TARDIS and it seems as if he's running away. And yet he shows up at the other end. And the next episode, I think there's still some carryover of the Time Lord Victorious, right? Like, you know, he shows up in his Hawaiian shirt and he's got his hat on. And it takes the return of the Time Lord, spoiler alert, to humble him, I think, no?
I agree. Because he suddenly goes from this guy that's just been playing by the rules of what he thinks is a dead society, to then going, I'm making the rules. I am the dead society. You know, this is me. And then suddenly he is just brought back down to earth with a bump. Yeah. You know, the fact that suddenly there are consequences to what he is doing and saying.
No, it's,
if anything, I think I don't want to talk too much about next week, but if anything, I think the whole Time Lord Victorious thing carries all the way through the next specials. When you think towards the end, it's down to him making the decision on what happens. He wants to decide and choose who lives and who died, sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely what I'm saying. Like, you think it's wrapped up here with him seeing that Ood. Okay,
yeah.
Just quickly, what's the deal with the Ood? How is the Ood there?
I've always thought it's like a figment of his imagination. Like, they're talking through his head.
Okay.
Oh, like that's that. Quite clever, actually.
Yeah.
I never thought they were actually there.
That's him. Yeah. They're either psychic projecting onto him, or he's like,
yeah,
Okay, all right, nice. But yeah, he sort of, he sees the Ood and he gets in his TARDIS and you think, okay, that's probably the end of the Time Lord Victorious, but it comes back up and I just think that's quite interesting. Anything to add, lads? Any Jack's notes? Any Brad's notes? I can't think of anything
memories.
Else.
I don't have notes, I just have memories.
I've got to say,
I don't need notes.
I agree with your statement at the start of this episode, Josh. This was one of the best episodes of Doctor Who. Like
the only, no, go on.
I was gonna say the horror, the story, the whole actions have consequence. And the ending as well. Just fucking hell.
I agree with you on the whole horror side of things of this episode, and obviously it is up there with one of like the scariest episodes of Doctor Who and stuff. But maybe it's just the age difference because it's probably a few years on now. But do you think this is scarier than the gas mask children ones?
100%. I never found the gas mask one scary.
Oh, I think that's a lot more creepy.
It's scary, a creepier vibe. It's a creepier vibe. But I don't know. I never remember being scared by the gas mask kids.
Really?
Yeah, not scared, like unsettled. Yeah, I suppose it's probably very, and I know we've brought it up a couple of times, it probably is very similar to Alien and Aliens. That has a creepy, unsettling vibe, but not really much happens in it. Whereas this, it's like, you know, it's everything ramped up to a fucking 11. It really is this episode. And for me, I still think to this day, the simple makeup of just cracking a few people's mouths, that's the scariest looking monster we've had in Doctor Who, I think.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is by far the, like, even the jump scare, the first time it's revealed, it just shows, like, kind of, it's just a combination of, just, like, as I say, I'm going back to the kind of the screen. It just, oh, man, it's creepy. It is proper creepy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Any final notes?
No,
that's it. I've said, you know, exactly what I think, and this is I think is the best episode of Doctor Who so far.
Well, I don't think it needs to ask him, but out of habit, love it or hate it, JP. Ooh,
easy love it, Brad.
Yeah, obviously an easy love it. Yeah, no doubt.
And Josh,
it's got to be a love it for me. I'm with you. I think it's probably my favourite episode of Doctor Who. I also think, and I think about this more often, this is my Roman Empire, by the way, guys. If I was to get, like, obviously not you, JP, because we've made you start from the beginning, but if you were like, I'm looking for a show, I don't know what to watch, you guys keep on talking about Doctor Who, give me an episode to watch, it would be this, or it would be Voyage of the Damned. As like the two, if you want to know what Doctor Who is like when there's no lore you need to worry about, there's no companions you need to worry about, it's just pure the Doctor action fun, I would recommend this, or I would recommend Voyage of the Damned.
I'd agree with this one, to be fair. Probably not Voyage of the Damned, but I'd agree 100% with this one. I think in terms of what you guys are saying, it's probably best so far. I think I'm probably just mixing up with, you know, it's out there, it's up there with one of the best actual episodes in terms of plot and stuff, but when I think of best or favourite episode, I always revert back to the series 4 finale because of the nostalgia and everyone who's involved. But obviously that isn't as good as a plot base. This is probably up there with the best plot episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. It's, you know, like people say their favourite MCU film is Endgame. Like, well, it's probably just because everybody's in it though. If you actually look at it from a technical point of view, you know, the plot isn't great in Journey's End. You know, it is heavily reliant on just all the cameos that are there. This is, you could show this to someone that's never even heard of Doctor Who, and I would say 9 times out of 10, they'll say, oh, that was quite a good episode of this show that you've just put on. Whereas Journey's End, they'd probably be like, oh, okay, that was probably fine, but I didn't know what the hell was going on for half of it. Do you know what I mean?
Too many people I don't know about,
Yeah. So I think that holds that back a little bit. But just absolutely fantastic. And then, I mean, it ends with that Next Time trailer and the return of And you sort of guessed this a little, I think, on our last episode, JP, but the Master's back.
Yes, I did, because it was the only thing that I thought about the drums. As I said about the knocking.
He will knock four times.
Yeah, it was the only thing, because you was kind of hinted it would have been someone that we, you know, had seen before. And it was the only thing I could think of that something, kind of that was involved in like a rhythm or something thing. So, yeah, very interesting to see. He's blonde as well.
He's Blonde Master. I don't know why they decided that was a good change. But yeah, we will be back next week to see if you were right, JP, because there's still a small chance that you're not. I had forgotten. Or, okay, maybe that's not the right way to phrase it. Watching that Next Time trailer got me more hyped for it than I thought it would.
There you go.
You know, jumping ahead a little bit, I think it's quite boring and it doesn't need to be a two-parter. But watching that trailer, I was like, actually, I'm quite keen to put this on. I'm quite keen to watch this. I forgot we've got fucking James Bond in it as well. I know he wasn't in the Next Time trailer, but that's a mad bit of cast. We'll talk about it next week. Anyway, boys, thank you for coming. Thank you, everybody who is still listening to us, by the way. That is mental that we've still got people listening to us and wanting to come on the show. Again, Matthew Roberts, I absolutely loved that thing that you said about that thing. It was brilliant. Thank you for coming on. Yeah, I think that's all from me. Lads, you want to wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, you've pretty much said everything there. You know, thank you for you know, still continuing to support us and listen. You know, let us know, as you said. You know, if you want to appear on the podcast and you know, kind of give us your thoughts, you know, and let people know who you are, give us a shout, drop us a DM. We're on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, our email's there as well, or even just drop us a like on Spotify.
Oh,
I don't know that you can drop a like on Spotify, but way to sound out of touch. I don't
think you can follow.
You can follow and you can star and you can review. I don't know that you can like.
It's a love heart thing you can do.
But speaking of liking, do get involved with our YouTube, because we've hit 90 subscribers, which we're going up, which is good, but not as much as I would like. So just do that. Give us a like and a subscribe.
All platforms, no matter what, we love everyone equally.
Exactly, except for TikTok or X. Anybody on either of those two apps need to be shot. that really is it. Adios, amigos, from me. And
adios,
next week.
Amigos.
See you next week.